as promised, in studio, we have got Michelle Duplessis, and we are talking everything to do with Fugazza. But good morning, Michelle. Welcome in studio. It's so lovely to have you.
Good morning. It is so exciting to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. But Michelle, as a small community, we always seem we walk past each other constantly, we wave at each other, we know each other, but sometimes we don't know each other on a little bit more of a personal level. So before we even start talking about Fugazza, please give us a bit of a synopsis of where you started, where did you grow up, and a bit of a background of your sort of growing up years, schooling, studying, and then we always want to know, how did you land up in Hoed Spruit?
Thanks so much. Well, I'm actually a local girl, and not in Hoed Spruit, but I grew up in Nelspruit. My parents and grandparents were farmers in the area, and I went to school at Lowveld High. And thereafter, I went off to Maritzburg Varsity, and I actually did a teaching degree. And after that, ended up teaching for a year. I ended up teaching matrics at Stanger High School on the North Coast, and that was an experience that made me take a step back
and
never again. I thought never again. I was young. I was also, 16 in matric, so I was a young teacher. And it was quite daunting, and towards the end of the year, I had a loan to pay back with the Department of Education in Natal, and I did 1 year, and I sent them an email, and I said, I'm going to take a break. And what I did was I went overseas. I took a return ticket for a year with the intention of just going to explore, see what's happening, and just try and, get some more life experience. And I ended up in the last month of my journey, and I took out a map. I always wanted to go to the Greek islands. So I took out a map, took a pencil, made a dot on the map, and it ended on the island of Mykonos. Oh. So I got onto a ferry, and off I went to Mykonos, and that turned into a four-year story. I then traveled, worked, I did everything. I worked from being a cleaner to a scullery person. I then was a bartender, and finally I ended up running a little B&B in Mykonos, a 12-bedroom hotel. Delicious. And then after that ended up being a chef. And then my mother phoned me when I was 27, and she said, when are you going to grow up? You need to come home. So I did that, and ended up coming back to South Africa, and then ended up meeting my husband, who was in the hospitality industry. We ended up in Kimberley, and I started a school in Kimberley because I had no job, and he was in the hotel business, and I was a teacher, and so I went back into teaching, and I started.
But obviously going in so much wiser, with such a different outlook to teaching.
Absolutely, and I was more mature. And I was fortunate enough to meet a fantastic woman in Kimberley, and the two of us started a school called the Solplaiki Education Centre, and it was 1993 when the education system was changing because of the new dispensation. And what was happening was kids were coming out of the townships, not gaining entry, not having the skills for English and maths. So we started an afternoon school, and before we knew it, we had 200 children. Wow. That we were teaching in the townships in the afternoons. Anyway, long story short, we went to De Beers and got a geology building donated. And so I did that for 3 or 4 years. And then my husband was retrenched, and we ended up both getting a job in the lodge industry at Pindar. And that's how I entered the hospitality industry. And I then made my way up through the ranks. I was a general manager. I went straight in. I wasn't formally trained, but I'd had a lot of experience overseas, and obviously hospitality I hadn't had a knack for. And then ended up, my last journey was in the lodge industry, was with the Tinswalo Group, Tinswalo Lodges. I was with them right from the beginning when they built their first lodge here in Hoedspruit. Wow. So I then moved to Hoedspruit in the early 2000s.
And what was here? There was literally... Southern Cross, you said Southern Cross was just
Well, Southern built. Cross was in its concept stages, and I was actually in the Waterberg, and our children, we were homeschooling at the time. And
how many children do you have?
I have five children.
You've got five children?
Yes.
Wow, that's fantastic. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I'm a mom of five.
How many girls and how many boys?
So four girls and a son.
And a son.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Congratulations.
And it's funny how things turn, because I started here with our school journey with the children was here, and all I wanted to do was to get them into Southern Cross, because it sounded as though it was an amazing concept. So we looked for work here, and we ended up working, and I subsequently then joined the Tinsel Swallow Group, and my son has just matriculated last year from Southern Cross after having a gap in Johannesburg in between.
So you've gone full circle with your kids.
I've gone full circle, and I'm actually living on the estate that I wanted to live on in the beginning but couldn't afford it. I had a piece of land on Raptors, and then I had to sell it along my journey. And here I am back living on Raptors.
Unbelievable.
It's quite funny, and it's just incredible to see how this town has flourished.
Yes. And so the Tinswalo group, that was, how many years were you there?
So I was with them for around 15 years, and I then went back to Johannesburg in 2015. And started my own consulting business, which was going really well. And then out of the blue, I got a phone call to say, there's a post at the Field Guides Association of Southern Africa. Why don't you apply?
And that was in Johannesburg.
Yeah. So we were living back in Johannesburg. And I said to Natasha, who was the lady that called me, I said to her, no, I don't think that is for me right now. She said, no, come on, have a look at it and go for the interview. I went for the interview and I was hired on the spot. So here I am. This is my seventh year with the Field Guides Association of Southern Africa.
And, you know, I can completely understand how the synergy would have worked from being in the bush, working in Tinswala for so many years, all the experience that you've got, not just dealing with the customer, guests, but dealing with all the guides, dealing with everybody that makes a lodge work.
Absolutely. So I was on the other side.
Yes.
And understand operations,
yes,
and just, you know, in terms of how crucial and important guides are in tourism and in a safari context.
So, there we go. I mean, that's why I can understand that Natasha saw the reasoning of putting that opportunity out for you to go. And when you went for that interview, I'm sure everything must have just fallen into place for you, hey?
Yeah, it went pretty well. It was quite daunting, to say the least. I mean, it's quite a... and I don't want to sound, you know, disrespectful or anything, but it's a very much a male-dominated business.
Yeah, of course.
And the whole structure of the organization was very much one-sided. But it was great to we have a fantastic team. Always have had a very well-structured team. But yeah, it was interesting. But I clicked immediately, and I realized that I could make a contribution.
Fantastic. And from there onwards, Michelle, so you were staying in Joburg now, you had joined FGASA, and can you then give us, and you know, it's an acronym that people use more than actually knowing what it actually stands for. So let's go back to the basics of what FGASA actually stands for.
So the acronym is the Field Guides Association of Southern Africa. And it basically is exactly that. It's an association of members. We're a non-profit company, and it is based on a membership model, and we represent guides. Members are guides primarily, although we do have many other members, other stakeholders and employers and that sort of thing, but our main membership base are guides.
And when we talk guides, field guides, are there different types of guides?
There are. Our main membership base is are the field guides. We're talking about the nature guiding sector here, which is very much guides that are out in nature, guiding either on foot or in a vehicle or in a park, you know, something along those lines. They're in nature, and they're bringing those nature experiences to guests. So those are primarily the members that is that are most of our members, particularly the safari industry. But we also have other guides. We represent some culture guides and tourist guides. Okay. So we have various categories, but our main representation is for the nature guiding industry, as well as we're wanting to also recognize trackers into the future. So looking at the whole ecosystem.
So putting it all under one umbrella.
Yes, yes.
And obviously... You've got, what is your core goal at the end of the day for FAGASA is to protect and have standards, I would presume. So is that what your goal is ultimately and mission for FAGASA?
Absolutely. You know, as it stands now, and there's quite a journey that we've been through, but the initial conception of FAGASA was guides got together and they realized in the safari context that there weren't standards. There weren't even qualifications. So how did this industry create something? You know, how they considered, you know, what needed to be created to create a skilled, safe, knowledgeable, professional guide in a safari context. So that is where it all stems from. And from there, we got involved into developing the entry-level qualifications as we have it now, which are skills programs, and we then embarked on, you know, expanding that into other journeys, the Trails Guide, which is one of our well-known standards that we have. Those are guides walking in dangerous game areas. But yeah, we've been crucial in contributing to, you know, what has evolved over time. And now we are a professional body. So we recognize guides as professionals, and our core goal is to set and maintain those standards, which in itself then protects the guides, it protects the industry, because it's all pulled together by a code of conduct. And so we now are the voice, and our goal is to create that community for guides. And number one is to give them the recognition they deserve because it's a career.
Yes.
And all our structures and our evolution to getting to that point has all been put in place because we have created those structures. Yeah. But to just go back to your question about what is our goal is to recognize the nature guiding sector, the guides that work in this sector, as professionals, and give them the opportunity for attaining those professional levels.
And obviously that comes with having that professional accolade behind your name. It also sets a standard in terms of earnings for the field guides out there. And you know, it's never been it's always been perceived as a low paying area of employment, but I would expect that when you've got that FAGASA backing behind you, it increases your opportunity for that recognition to be earning a better salary because you are professionally trained.
Absolutely. Look, I think, you know, our mandate is that now, you know, we are not in a position to and never have prescribed or dictated to industry in terms of remuneration. You know, that's never been our focus or mandate. We often get criticized for not doing enough in that, but at the time of being an accredited training provider, because that's how we started, we kind of evolved into delivering training through partnerships. That was more the focus. But now we are at the point where we are the professional body. We can certainly make recommendations. But before we can even make recommendations, you know, we've got to recognize the guides as professionals. So they now have the opportunity for applying for professional designations. And that in turn gives them credibility. That sets the benchmark of where they're at in their career. So it talks back to the recognition. And it also talks back to opportunity.
Definitely.
We know for a fact that our guards get better opportunity when it comes to employment, because industry has trusts our standards. They trust what a guard has gone through to get to that standard. And they also acknowledge that that standard represents a certain level of skill and very high skills. I mean, if you go into what these guards need to know, yes, and deliver and, you know, conduct their experiences in that professional way, it is very intense. And it's a long journey. So the fantastic thing is we can now recognize that, yes, with proper designations that are certified.
What is the sort of minimum entry criteria for someone that wants to become a field guard? Where do they actually start? Do they start at FGASA, or what is their path? So you've finished matric, you've passed matric, you can go into study because you've is there a minimum criterion what the marks are as well?
So you need to start with getting a minimum requirement of a qualification. And that you acquire through any training setup. Any accredited, trusted, credible organization that delivers training. So things are a little bit different in South Africa, and we're a little bit ahead of the game of the rest of Africa when it comes to guarding. It's in our Tourism Act that a guard, to be legal, to operate legally, needs to have some form of qualification. And unfortunately, through the evolution of how things have worked out for guards, the entry level is a skills program. It's not even a qualification. But be that as it may, it's just how things have evolved in South Africa. So you need that entry level, which is a CACETA accredited program. It's a skills program, and it's a nature site guard program.
And those are various, there's obviously all around South Africa, there are various colleges, or is it a university type of environment that register and go and do that?
So until a year ago or so, that was any accredited institution that was accredited with CACETA.
Okay.
So CACETA is the body that manages that process. And FGASA was in that camp until recently, because we were an accredited provider. But in order for us to meet the criteria to register with SAQA, which is the South African Qualifications Authority, as a professional body to be recognized, we had to relinquish accredited training, because you cannot be in both camps. So that is what we've done, and we've, over the last 2 to 3 years, we've evolved and changed our structures from a legal perspective, meeting the legal requirements. So we're phasing out the accredited training to totally, we won't be offering that
outsourced,
at all,
yes.
Outsourced.
Yes.
And so a guard, any guard that has an entry level, has an opportunity to join the FGASA journey and to join a career path.
Wonderful.
So that is very exciting for us. It opens it up to any guard that is passionate about wanting to go on to this career. We have the career paths worked out. It's a very structured journey. And so we see that as very positive in terms of transforming the industry, transforming the organization, because we basically are allowing access for any guard that has that minimum requirement. And obviously they need to meet requirements to come in, but it's open to everybody. So to go back to your first question about where do they start, a person needs to go to an accredited provider.
Okay.
Get the entry level, which is the minimum requirement, and then approach the organization for FGASA, approach us if they would like to have the standard, and embark on a professional career.
So that's the next step.
So that would be the next step. And there are no real hurdles for any guard wanting to start. There's no, you need to be 18. There's a little bit of a few hoops that guides need to jump through, because if they're going to be operating in a scenario where they need vehicles and things like that, and they need to be driving guests around on public roads, they need a PDP, which is the professional driver's permit, and that they can only get when they're 21.
Okay. And would that apply with weapons, with firearms?
Correct. So there's a whole compliance issue there as well. But theoretically, if it's your passion and you want to get involved, you can. The entry, it's a very it's not an onerous entry level, which is fantastic. Yes. And then we've always seen it as a, you know, once you have entry, it's kind of an apprenticeship period and an internship period where you're going to go and learn the ropes. You know, you've got the minimum. Now, how do you build yourself up? Yeah. How do you get to a professional level? How do you get to the standards that we've created over so many years? So we've just strengthening those now, and it is very, very exciting.
And just to go back a little bit, Michelle, you obviously mentioned that FAGASA was in Johannesburg. And what was behind that moving... I mean, if you think of FAGASA, you automatically associate it with Bush. I can't even think of it being in Joburg. But how did that move happen for you to come to Hoedspruit? And you find that it's found its roots here.
Oh, it's fantastic to be here. You know, it was always, when I joined, you know, you go back and you look at minutes and things like that, and it was always mentioned a couple of times in board meetings and that. The heart of the safari industry, without, you know, and I'll get to that, we have a very strong model of representation throughout South Africa. But most of our members that are in the safari industry as trails guides and field guides and professionals and going up in their levels operate out of this. This is like the hub of the safari industry. And so from a membership perspective, we have many, many more members here than any other province. So it was a natural idea that came up, and we then went through COVID, which was quite challenging for us, and we had to obviously relook our model in terms of delivery on, you know, in the field, because the success of FAGASA is also the practical application. We have partnerships and delivery partners that we endorse to deliver the training historically. And we then had to tweak a few things we brought in online. And when that happened, we suddenly realized that we could actually operate from anywhere.
Remotely, yes.
And so it came up again in a board meeting, and I said, well, I would love to put my hand up to do that and champion this, but provided we got the buy-in from our team. So it was a two-year process where we engaged with our team. We obviously engaged with our regional forum and our board, etc. And so we got it was a fantastic agreement, yeah, because there was no real objections. And so it was a two-year process. And lucky to say... we arrived in Hoedspruit 4 years ago,
wow,
when the second boom hadn't happened yet. So we were very lucky to get lovely premises, and we were all able to settle in fairly nicely, you know, into finding accommodation and all of those practical things that you need to think about. And so here we are.
4 years later.
4 years later, we're going into our fourth year. Most of our team is here, and it's also grown a little bit. We do have two team members that are in Johannesburg. That was also a transition that we accommodated. We figured out that as we needed a support structure for our members, more focused support structure online, via telephone, you know, helping members and that sort of thing. So the two members, Pretty and KG, who live in Johannesburg, they chose not to move down. And so we accommodated them, and they work from remotely. Okay. So they're our remote support office. And here we are working really well, and it's fantastic. We get more visitors than we've ever had because we're in the heart of the area.
Yes.
We've got, you know, guides coming in all the time. employers coming in, anybody to do with FOGASA. We just it's so great to be on the ground, being able to connect with the guides in a more meaningful way.
And talking about connecting, how do you connect internationally? How does that synergy work for you? Who are your outside associations?
So FOGASA has our structure is based on regional representation. So we have champions in every province. They get they form part of our regional representative forum, and they are the connecting point for the guides in that area. Beyond South Africa, we have many countries on board, like Namibia, Botswana, Kenya, Tanzania, and so on. And it all is based on the guides that have been through the system and then have put themselves forward by their peers to be the person representing that region. In addition to having that model, so that allows those representatives, we meet four times a year. We then meet with the board. They are instrumental in for us to make decisions. So we have a great footprint. It's also that person's responsibility to connect with people on the ground, to see what they need, to provide networking opportunities, to see how we could help mentor, provide opportunity to help them along their journey to attaining their, you know, their designations and the qualifications as they go up. And that works really well. And then internationally, we belong to the World Tourist Guide Association. So we're an association that we represent South Africa.
Okay.
So we represent South African guides in that context. So it's not individuals that belong to that. It's us as an association. And so that's how we connect. And a lot of our partners, our delivery partners that deliver the training, have quite a big international interest. There are many internationals that come to South Africa wanting the experience, a lot of them wanting to become guides, which is quite difficult as you go down the track if you don't own a business. But a lot of them come and do the experiences, and so our partners have created some fantastic products for that sector. So we have an additional presence through that, through a lot of people coming to Africa wanting an experience, and a lot of them want to actually just go through the guiding experience, an entry level from a guiding perspective, but also from a knowledge perspective. Because we don't only offer programs for guides, we also offer programs for people that are interested in nature. So we have a lot of people that possibly own a lodge or live in the bush
and just want to have
the knowledge. Yes. So we've got a nature enthusiast program. Wonderful. For that. We also have a fantastic junior program, which is a discussion
about.
For
yes.
another day.
Yes. Yes.
But we're very well presented and represented across Southern Africa. We've also had and it's not, remember, our organization is made up of our guides.
Yeah.
And that is also a fantastic thing about FOGASA, is that it grew and has become what it is
because of
guides. Yeah. And we never want to lose that, even transitioning through into becoming a professional body. We wouldn't be what we are without the people that have walked the journey and actually gotten their professional career expanded and gone down the track.
And what happens, for example, to guides that, you've got guides that have been working specifically for a lodge, and it's their career. And is there any retirement support, or is that individually based on where they work? So if the guide's he's been guiding for 60 years of his life and he wants to retire, does FOGASA have any impact with that at all? Is it not something that you could look at if there was all the guides made a contribution? And do they make a contribution? Is there a, a, is it a, pay to register to on Fagasa, and is there not an opportunity maybe to look at having a small pension fund?
Sure, it is definitely something to look at, because you know now we are as our function now, our role is to be the voice, to be the body that recognizes professionals. Absolutely, there's an opportunity on various fronts. You've just mentioned one item, but there are various ways in which we can support guards going forward in their professions. So we really baby steps now at the beginning in terms of the structures and providing those benefits. But certainly it is something to look at. You know, we already have the insurance world supporting us, because they understand their risk.
Very high.
If you've got professionals dealing with guests in a dangerous scenario out in the veld, you know, there's some reassurance there that they know that guards are at a certain level and have skills.
Okay.
But in terms of you know, we could certainly work on something. I mean, it would be great to open that up as we go along, you know, and include the benefits and improve.
Like a small UIF fund.
Absolutely.
Not paying them out fortunes, but
yeah,
should they
something.
Be injured or...
Sure.
Obviously in conjunction with the employer, but some of them are private. Hey?
Yeah,
some of
yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the guards, you know, guards work in various contexts. There's a lot of guards that are employed, fixed posts, permanent posts in the lodge environment. You've also got many, many guards working in the parks environment across Africa. And also then you've got freelance guides that work for themselves, have their own businesses, private guides. So it's quite a big, there's quite a lot of many avenues that they can go down. And we do already have in place an accident cover for guards that we have negotiated for guards that possibly may not be supported on a medical aid. It's not a medical aid, but it is a cover and hospitalization cover should something go wrong. So that we've already implemented, and that's actually building quite nicely.
Wonderful.
And it's very affordable. So naturally, you know, we can expand. There's so many things that we can do in the future. And going back to your question about, you know, is there any fee? There's a membership fee every year. This is a member-based organization.
Yes.
You know, there's a team of 9 of us running the organization and working really hard to provide the best possible service and support to our guards, because we track all our guards on a software system. We know exactly where they are. They're keeping logbooks. We're making sure that they're up to date, that they're legal, that, you know, all of those functions come into it. And membership is a key income stream for us. So there's an annual fee, which is not very high. It's really there to contribute towards the running costs. And the other reason we moved from Johannesburg at the time was really just some costs. You know, we were looking to see how we could streamline premises and that sort of thing. When we were very lucky to secure a long lease here for the moment. I think it could be challenging going forward because Hoedspruit has become very expensive.
Yes.
And so,
where is your office at the moment, if people don't know?
Our office is at the Farmery in Zandspruit.
Okay, wonderful.
And we were one of the first buildings to go up, which was really exciting. Yeah. It's a little bit small for us at the moment, but we're making do and we've kind of revamped it a bit.
And open door policy, Michelle, if people
absolutely.
Want to come in and have a chat, get some information, they can come straight to your offices.
Open door policy, we've got most of our team there. Every day we work from 7:30 in the mornings till 4:00, and open door policy.
Wonderful.
Some of the other key might, you know, if it's a serious issue or something like that, you know, you can make an appointment.
Yeah.
But we have an open door policy, and our team is on hand to help with anything.
And finally, if you had to describe Fagasa and the impact it's had on guiding and conservation and tourism in one sentence? I don't know how you can do it.
Okay, I'm going to try.
What would it be, Michelle?
So, you know, FOGASA has made a significant contribution to shaping nature guiding by establishing trusted professional standards, empowering skilled guides, and ensuring that guides are recognized.
And that is what is so important, is that recognition. But you've definitely summed it up for us, because that puts it all into one sentence.
Yeah, thank you.
And what we want our listeners out there to know is that this is just the start of what we want to achieve and getting FOGASA out there. But there's so many other avenues to what FOGASA does. So we will be doing a series. We're going to build up a series of interviews, and we're going to be recording them. I've recorded this one, so it will go onto our website as well. I'll send it through to you as well, Michelle, and you can share that as well. And if anyone needs to get hold of Michelle directly, what number can they use? Is there an office number?
There's an office number. Don't be confused. It's a Johannesburg number, okay, but it's voice over IP. It works all over. It's 011-886-8245.
Wonderful.
And I just want to end off by saying thank you so much for this opportunity. And, you know, we are not isolated. Yeah. We are part of an ecosystem. We are part of this fabulous community here, which extends across Southern Africa. And we're very excited about what's to come, the discussions that we're going to have in future, because we would love to bring in the people that are involved and have supported us in making this organization successful.
Yes,
absolutely.
100%. So thank you so
much.
It's been absolutely wonderful. So that is 16 minutes to 12. So we had a good 45-minute interview, and that is brilliant. So thank you for your patience, for listening out there. I hope you've learned a lot. I definitely have learned a lot. And it's always nice to know, to stand up and proudly say, yes, I know what FOGASA is.